Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/arts. Just go to Indeed.com/arts right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/arts. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Right before the speaking engagement began, there was a massive explosion. I mean, this rattled, moved buildings, shattered glass, et cetera, at the grain bin. And I looked downriver toward it. Whether this was really there or not, I don't know, but I saw five wisps of smoke, or it was spirits, that just floated up into the air. And lo and behold, five men were killed that evening.
My guest is Tracy Bray. Right now, I think, is a good opportunity to explore what other aspects we have as human beings that may or may not be fully acknowledged, fully activated, and a time when we're experiencing extreme chaos is incentive to turn back toward the inner focus, because that's where things change. With Tracy, we can take a look at how she discovered her own abilities. You can access Tracy on Facebook or through her webpage, tracybray.com, and she's available for readings. Tracy, thank you. It's great to talk with you.
Thank you for having me today, Wendy. I'm really happy and excited to be here.
Backstory, how did you get started?
Oh, gosh. Actually, by people telling me that they thought I was psychic. It was in my late 20s. I was supervising a lot of people at the time. And I'd hear things when we made a decision about something where I leaned in a different way than everybody else. And whatever way that was happened to work. Were all my decisions always workable and worked out? No. But sometimes they were in a noteworthy way. And people would say, why did you go right when everybody else went left? I didn't really have a clear answer to that, just because I knew I was supposed to, and that that would be the best thing for all of us. And then those comments would be followed with uncomfortable laughter. Gee, you must be psychic, and I'd laugh along with. So after that happened a number of times, I started to wonder, well, am I? And that's how the psychic part started, and that's how reading started. I said to my then at the time secretary, which would be totally inappropriate to do today, who I knew was into readings, how about you let me read for me on Sunday afternoon? You got anything going on? And that's how it started. And it started by word of mouth. The medium part and psychic readings, I should explain, are looking at past, present, or future, and can cover any amount of time or time frame. I prefer to work with really specific questions from people when I do that. But I'm a medium. All psychics are mediums, but not all mediums are psychics. And as a medium, I connect with people that have passed away. And that work didn't really start as work. It started as a realization when I was 5 years old. My mother took a phone call. We were at home, that my paternal grandfather had died abruptly at work. And she started to cry. And my next youngest sister, I'm one of three girls, the oldest, my next youngest sister was standing there with me. And we said, Mama, what's the matter? And she said, Grandpa died. And from my religious orientation, I knew that that's when we went to heaven and were with God, who was this Caucasian man, a little bit overweight with a white beard and scary as all heck. And I turned around and looked. We were in our kitchen, and I turned around and looked, and there was my grandfather standing in the dining room. And I remember thinking how odd that was, probably because I don't recall him being at our house ever. We always went to his house. And he was just standing, no pun intended, with this deadpan stare at me. And I looked back at him again, and my mom and my sister didn't seem to be paying attention. And I said, "Mom, why is Grandpa standing in the dining room?" And she looked, and I don't know whether she saw him or not, but she kind of pinged me in the head and said, "When your father comes home, don't you dare say anything about this." And I didn't. Came from a household that was not safe all the time, and decided not to say anything. And I didn't say anything, tell anybody, until about 2 years after I started doing psychic readings, when somebody asked me if they could talk to someone in their life that had passed away. And within the next 3 weeks after that, I did two readings like that, where the response from the deceased was so phenomenal and overpowering that the first one I thought, well, that was cool. The second reading, I thought, oh my goodness, I can do this. I wonder if I'm supposed to be doing this. And that's how that started.
You're also registered as a Winbridge certified research medium, and that has some clout. That's basically a credit, or, you know, saying that you are qualified, certified, and legit.
Yes, that does. And I'm really proud of that. There are five programs in the world that use mediums for research, and that's research about consciousness. Consciousness in this case being that the soul continues to live after the physical body dies, passes away. And Winbridge is located in Tucson, Arizona, and directed by a woman named, the director of research is Dr. Julie Beischel. These are peer-reviewed, held in high standing in the research community studies with, I think there are 18 of the original 20 of the research mediums left, of which I am one. I'm just really proud of that. We didn't do any training with Winbridge. All of us were practicing full-time mediums when we weren't all practicing, but we were qualified. That's probably not a fair word to use. In any case, they qualified us. If you go to their website, winbridge.org, and look up the eight main steps, the hoops that we jumped through to be approved out of well over 1,000 other mediums and selected, it was a several month process. And I'm really proud of the work we've done.
I think that says a lot in terms of the integrity, trying to get people all on the same page. That isn't easy to do. There's a lot wrapped up in this in terms of some people don't test well. Do you know what I mean? It's all of a sudden something, there's a pressure that comes with being tested, and you have to be able to be secure and aware that this is what you're doing and very focused. But that, I think, speaks to the level of ability that somebody has to be able to achieve that.
That is very true, because in any of the Winbridge experiments, they might be using all of us or just a few of us. And we haven't done many in recent years, but that's simply because of a lack of funding. But we never know how we did in any piece of research we did. We don't know, you know, if they're scoring them, we don't know what they scored us as. We don't know who, and it's not the case with some of the other research programs of days gone by, where it could have become more of a competitive thing. It takes all of the steps they put into the research eliminate the ability to cheat and to read minds and a whole bunch of other things that could go amok. So it's not for the faint of heart, really.
I could imagine. Okay. Because there's your own criteria of, did I do it well? Am I okay? Am I qualified? Should I be doing this? The imposter thing of I'm not good enough. All that drama. Okay. On the email I just got, which I really like the layout. I like everything that you include in that and talking about doing some writing, upcoming writing. But there's a picture of a tornado. So the weathering of the storms, do you have premonitions that have to do with upcoming events like that?
Not about weather so much. I went through a period of time years ago where I did about air crashes, and I still do to a certain degree, as in like with the recent bout in the U.S. we had with the, what were the three? There was one, one on the, at Reagan International Airport.
Yes.
And I'm not even calling right now. I'm so sorry. The other two. But about 3 days before the first one, I just started thinking about air crashes. And I don't, you know, stop my life and get all wrapped up in that. But it was worthy of note to me. But there was a period of time, probably 20 years ago, where I dreamed some extreme specifics about some internationally known air crashes, usually within 24 hours of them happening. And I got to a point, I can tell you the first one that happened for me actually was much longer ago than that, probably in the early 80s. It was the Sioux City crash of, it crashed at the airport, but tumbled over its wings onto the airfield when it landed, because it was, I think, going triple the speed it should have landed at. And there were several people killed in that. I want to say like well over 100. And anyway, I was working with the same secretary that I mentioned earlier, and went into work that morning and said, and that crash didn't happen until later that day, and said, oh my gosh, I had the most awful dream last night, and described this. And I had recently flown United, and in the dream it was a United jet because I remembered it from the color scheme and stuff. Anyway, told her what the dream was and went home and watched the 6 p.m. national news, and there it was. And it really rattled me. Then it happened a few more times. And so then in my thought, my prayer, I said, well, if you want me to have these dreams, give me specifics and I'll, and enough time to get in touch with somebody before something happens, so that I at least have the opportunity to be of assistance. Otherwise, and rarely, rarely would I cuss at spirit. I said, otherwise, leave me the hell alone, because I do not want this. There were probably three dreams after that, all of them which I had the luxury of reporting, and just had the wherewithal of being resourceful enough to actually get to who needed to be gotten to very quickly. It helps when that's at the 3 a.m, because these people would all be people that were on duty 24/7. But anyway, I never saw those three air crashes happen after that. And that was enough for me.
The other thing, there might be an indication that you're going to be needed because of those kinds of tragedies and that kind of trauma, is that, you know, just kind of a warning that these things are happening, and in some way you might be useful. Does that make sense?
It does. And in my own life, sort of kind of, that's happened also. Several years ago, I was doing a speaking engagement in Atchison, Kansas on a Saturday evening. Anybody that's in the Midwest and knows grain bins, I know you have people that listen all over the world, they're usually large concrete structures that hold corn or wheat or beans before they're loaded onto train cars or sometimes barges along the river. And this was along the river in the Missouri River in Atchison. And right before the speaking engagement began, there was a massive explosion. I mean, this rattled, moved buildings, shattered glass, et cetera, at the grain bin. And I looked downriver toward it. Whether this was really there or not, I don't know, but I saw 5 whiffs of smoke, or it was spirit, that just floated up into the air. And lo and behold, 5 men were killed that evening. The reason I'm telling you this about being of service later, I had the strong sense then that, and I wasn't from that area, didn't know people up in that area for the most part. And I thought somewhere down the road, one of those guys is going to come back in a reading. I just knew it. Several years after that, I was probably a good couple hundred miles down further south in Kansas, in Burlington, Kansas, doing a group reading there at, I believe it was their historical society. And this guy passed, came through in a reading. And I don't remember what I said at the time, but I knew he died in some kind of explosion. And up jumps this woman claiming it. And I don't remember the relationship. He might have been her cousin. but it was one of the men that had died in that explosion. And it was, I've heard from her a couple of times since at how healing that was for their family to hear from them all of those years later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And it's amazing. Yeah. You were there and that basically was a little stamp, you know, a time stamp of this is important.
Yeah.
Those kinds of things.
Well put.
Go ahead.
No, I said that was well put, a timestamp.
What I'm also thinking about in terms of being a medium and a psychic, for yourself, do you see when you have a health issue, such as, you know, the things we go through day to day, do you have a premonition this is coming forward, or is it just something, okay, this is happening, this is on my plate?
Health issues, somewhat, but I would say personal health is something I am just really tied into and cognizant of. So I probably am more hyper aware of what's going on with my body and my mind than the average Jane. Yeah, I do. And health is something that comes up in a lot of readings, both in medium readings and psychic readings. I would say I'm more astute at picking up on that in other people than I am with myself. But also when I think I might have something going on, I bet you my PCP would tell you that I'm hypervigilant. That I, you know, am in there the minute something goes. I'm like a mother with a new baby with myself. You know, your first baby, they say, I don't have kids, but mm-hmm. that you run in the first time as a runny nose.
The reason I ask is because one of the factors I read that was indicative of a medium is that they tended to have more health issues. And I thought, my sense is it has to do with being empathic and aware for other people because you're going through something similar. And so it puts you, I think, in a, you know, more of a compassionate frame of mind. You can tell me if I'm right or wrong on that, but that was one of the things I thought was an anomaly, was that the mediums that they tested, there was a tendency to have a health issue.
That is true. What we did was Winbridge profiled mediums, and I was really happy to be part of a big part of writing that content for the study. It was something that I believed for a long time that somebody, and thank God Dr. Beischel did it, was to look at who are these mediums that we are studying? What is there anything that makes them different than, you know, take 20 of them and 20 people off the street, what are the differences? And health issues were one of the things we looked at. And we compared it against, I don't know how many samples they had. I want to say well over 1,000 general public, some of whom claim to have, and I'm sure do have, psychic abilities. What was different? And health was one of those things, both mentally and physically. Many of the mediums are mediums off the charts, had experienced trauma, and had experienced significant physical illness. Does that mean that in order to be a good medium, that you need to be to experience those things, trauma and physical and or mental illness? And I would say no. But why is that? I don't have an answer that would have been researched as to why that might be. I think that the more one recognizes their own fragility in life, I think the closer to death that can bring an individual, or to the concept of what it might be like to have the body die. Correspondingly, one then, in my case, begins to realize that, yes, like a snake sheds its skin, the body dies, but the soul continues on. And I think in my case, in my lifetime, the more I've experienced that, which I have a few times, I think that I can't help but be more open to communicating with people that have passed.
Now, have you had
don't have the science to back that up.
Have you had a near-death experience?
I have not had a near-death experience in that I lost consciousness. Have I been in extremely borderline tragic experiences? Yeah. When I was 17, I was at the Tower of London, and it was bombed. The only bombing that has never been, nobody ever took accountability for it. But one person died, there were over 40 people injured. I've had a couple of near drowning experiences as a child. I, in a boat, had a motor quit on a boat I was in with my husband and another couple and a baby. And we were just going down a slough where barges would load and unload, and a barge started up and started to back right into us. So I've had, you know, things like that happen where truly my life flashed in front of my eyes, where some of my thought was the bombing, for example. I remember distinctly as a 17-year-old, quote, Tracy, "You've got to be kidding me. This is how I'm going to die. I can't believe this."
Oh, that was quick. So, yeah.
You know, and other ones have been kind of that common, thought. It truly, those experiences were, over time, literally slowed way down into slow-mo.
Yeah. Yes, I get that completely. I was attacked and in my house, middle of the night, that kind of thing. And my thought was, I am not dying in this bed. Not happening. But I had a tremendous spirit connection as this happened. And I was like in, you know, I know now I was like in more than one place, because I was hearing help, the voices, and I was in a way really connected with the other person. And almost, you know, seeing from that person, seeing that family. And that was quite illuminating, because when you think you're going to have an experience like that, none of that factors in. But definitely knowing that this was potential, not in my best interest if it continued. And then getting that burst of adrenaline that, you know, where you can pick up a 500,000-pound something when it's not humanly possible. Well, that happened, and I was able to do that. So not that that's how heavy it was.
But I'm glad you were able to do that. I'm glad you're here.
Well, that part of it, though, is knowing that when things happen, we have so many abilities at our disposal that we really don't have a clue how much we are capable of and what all is around us that can help us when we need it. And that's why, you know, I think talking with somebody who has been through a few hoops like you have to prove your accountability and your abilities, period, gives people an idea that this can be done. And this is something that we are, you know, we're surrounded by others who at any given time may be able to, I think, give us a clue about what's possible. Like that experience I had, nobody told me that could happen. It was incredible. And then having other experiences where I've had a voice tell me when I needed to run, or when, you know, when something was happening. Those things are life-changing. And right now with chaos, that seems to me to be the point, because chaos, when nothing is stable and everything is potentially, it can go one way or the other. We don't know. And those times of uncertainty are when we come back to, what can I do and how can I shift, if we don't get caught up in the drama? And it's frightening. It's scary. Everything's, there's no certain way to go forward. That's where that fear can basically hijack you. And if you go back and say, well, these are the things I can't control, and what can I? And I've seen people work through these kinds of issues and crises and come out stronger. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. People are resilient. If we weren't a resilient people earthwide, we wouldn't have been here for thousands of years. And nothing that is happening now is going to stop that resiliency. When you said a moment ago, nothing is stable right now, and I agree, everything, not everything, but so many things within our government seem unstable in our world. What I did was, sitting here, I'm sitting at my desk in my home office with my kitty Chester with his head right on top of her phone snoozing. He must love your voice. I kept my hands, both of them, and slapped them to my chest, to my heart. And my immediate thought was, but I am here. I am stable. And I planted both of my feet flat on the floor.
Yeah.
And I just kept that with my heart. And I thought, if we go back to ourselves, our soul connection. I believe our soul, our heart, is connected to a larger consciousness, some of which people will call God. Everybody has different names for it. But that is real. That is stable. And as long as we're breathing, we've got that.
When these things happen, there's a certain sense of it's in the timeline. These things, it's cyclical. And there's a book called The Fourth Turning. And that's something I looked at in terms of reading about what happens when societies, civilizations shift. Some collapse, some then recover. But there's a time when there's a tipping point and things shift. And this, I believe, worldwide, global, is when we are experiencing this tipping point. And the only thing that we have is our own sense of purpose. I think Mark Twain was quoted as saying, there are two times in your life that are the most important. And one is when you're born. And the next is being able to claim your divine authority and say, ah, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. This is why I'm here. It's like when you said, oh, I'm good at this. Maybe I could be a medium. It was like, well, yeah. So it's those kinds of things until something happens that throws everything that we've been doing autopilot. I'm supposed to do this. I'm supposed to do that. Society says this. And all of a sudden there's a crisis. Then all bets are off. And you figure out, oh, this is what I can do. And I think that's part of what's going on right now.
I agree with that. I'm reminded of toddlers running across the kitchen with a lot of adults in it, and they're running right for a hot stove, an oven door. And somebody reaches down and picks that kid up under the armpits and turns it in a different way, and off the kid runs in a different way. I think if the kid, which what little kid is going to have a sense that that oven they're running to is hot, somebody was there to pick him up and do the right thing, or her up and do the right thing, and off they go. I'm hoping that that's a very elementary comparison, but I'm hoping that that's the time period we as a world are in right now, because it seems that the powers that be here, and typically I don't talk about politics, but are making massive changes in both quality and quantity in just such a fast order. That's frightening, and I think it causes chaos where we have difficulty in focusing on things. I can tell you that in readings, and I've been reading over 40 years now for other people, this is the first time 2025, actually it started October or so of 2024, where maybe twice a year in two readings, somebody would ask something about the political landscape. It is rare now that I do a reading in that little time period from October of last year to present that somebody is not asking about it. Not only are they asking, they're afraid. I think that's part of my job, is to not predict what's going to happen necessarily, because some things I won't look at, but to lend assurance, which is partly my personal belief, but also partly something I see in readings all the time, that human kindness is overwhelming. I truly believe that.
I think, oh gosh, there was somebody who said that they had had an experience, and this has to do with the ET UFO stuff. She believed, and this is somebody who just came forward. She had been part of a story back when she was trying to be anonymous. And so years earlier, she had talked about how she remembered being taken, and that possibly that she would be put back in a test tube, a type of test tube. That's where her real body was. And so she is 93, and she reconnected with the person who wrote the story originally years ago. And she said, I had a near-death experience, and I was shown, I went right back to where that body was, and I'm here as a visitor. I'm experiencing this life on Earth. And my daughter said, well, why do you think you're here? Do you think, you know, if they had a choice of what they would do with this, what would they do? She says, well, I've been here experiencing humanity, and I think they will save us, or that we are worthy. Because when you look at it, when push comes to shove and there's a crisis, we will even put our own lives at risk to save somebody else. Now, that's not 100%, but that's saying that that's what we tend to do, is we tend to be something better than what we are given every day. We tend to put that quality, that life, that survival on hold if we see someone else at risk. And so I think, you know, I thought that was a lovely way of her because she hadn't wanted to talk about that earlier. She didn't want to lose her job. She had a decent government job. And so she kept it private. But then to go back and connect with the person and say, okay, this is what I also experienced recently, and I have no problem sharing my name. And so, but she's 93. So she's figuring it's safe now to say that this is what's been going on. So that's, and, you know, I can't prove that, but the experiences we have, whether they are in a dream state or in a physical state, our body and our minds say it's real. So we are experiencing it, whether it is something that somebody else can write on a piece of paper and say, yeah, check, 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 it's real. I think that doesn't make any difference. As long as we are able to know that these things can happen and we're experiencing these other types of realities, it says, again, we are more than what we seem.
I agree with that. It just, again, as a human race, we have survived thousands of years. I'm positive we as a human race are going to make it through this period that we're in, that this period we're in is going to insist upon, it will be a catalyst of change, of major change. And the people overall, and I think this is around the world, not just the United States, will insist on it. And we all, hopefully, will be the better for it. And, you know, when I think of people in Sudan and so on, I mean, we all, my hope is, will be better for it. Well, how do we account then for the trauma and the deaths and so on? That's too big of a question for me to ponder, not my wheelhouse. But it doesn't make it right, but I'm hoping things will be better.
My vision that I have for this is that we're going to go through some turbulence. You know that plane that landed upside down? It flipped upside down, I think. Was it in Canada where it landed? Okay, that's my sense, is that we're going to have to go through a few things that rock us to our soul and then say, it's okay, we came through. And here, you know, and next. But I do think that the turbulence, you were mentioning planes earlier. And well, you know, I think this image is kind of what things are right now. It's unexpected, and yet we're going to go through it. Back on your newsletter again, you also do some channeling. So have you channeled anything about the upcoming, you know, what's happening right now? Has that come through?
No. I do some channeled messages. I do one in each newsletter I send out. To sign up for that on my website, it comes up as an immediate pop-up to sign up. It's free. So those are just general channeled messages. I don't channel in readings, but I'm not asked to either, I would say that. And I've not really offered it, although it would be possible. And when I wrote the card deck that I have available also for sale on the website, which is a deck of affirmations and thoughts from, I believe that they came from people that were deceased directly that I'd read for over the years. And they're oracle cards. Where was I going with that? I got into this long speechola there. I channeled those. The third thing about channeling that I'm doing right now is I did that with Stacy Macy, a retired attorney in Kansas City, helped publish those. She just did the art on them. It's beautiful, and added some other really cool things to it. It was a really collaborative project. We had channeled, oh my gosh, probably, I would say around 30, the number might surprise you, archangels, and have been looking at doing something with that. And those have been fascinating. And some of those are archangels that Stacy and I have yet to hear from other places. They're non-existent to my knowledge to date. So if I have somebody says to me, will you channel like the archangels, for example, we just started with a list and then in a quick abrupt download, I got names of some, and Stacy is much more knowledgeable on archangels than I am. And some of them were known, some of them were not. And then individually per a session, we did one, sometimes maybe three in a session over a period of time.
Okay.
But otherwise, I don't do a lot of direct channeling.
Well, I saw the cards, The Soul Lives On, Life-Affirming Channeled Messages from Spirit, and then a journaling workbook that goes with that. That's available on your website. I thought those are great ways to just kind of do a quick hit, a kind of a touch base of what would be most helpful for me to hear at this time.
Exactly. And for someone that is grieving someone also, they're a great tool for that. Does, you know, my dad who's passed, for example, what message does dad have for me today? And, you know, if I shuffle the deck and pull one out, and usually it's quite apropos. They're a great tool.
I want to go back. When you saw in the kitchen, when you saw someone who was technically deceased, did it register for you? Did you reconnect? Did you ever see him again in any other instance?
No. I've never seen him appear like that to me, and anybody else for that matter that's gone. I think I've only ever had one other time somebody that I knew of came directly to me in that way, where they manifest.
Yeah.
So no, that doesn't happen in my own life, nor does that, that's not how it happens in readings. Although in readings, I see them literally in my mind's eye. I hear them often with my hearing and see how they react in their mannerisms and their hair color and so on and so forth, but not in the way where they are physically in my presence.
I had an experience with a friend, and she was really very supportive. She even sent a book to Oprah that, and she was trying to help me out. And I'm like, whoa, okay. So anyway,
cool.
But when she died, I was doing traffic, and I'm in the studio. And across from me, which is probably about, you know, maybe 3.5 feet across from the board where I'm at the microphone doing traffic. And I see what looked like, you know, when the TV would go dark at night and then fuzz, that white fuzzy stuff on the screen. That manifested in the shape of a person. And I'm thinking, and I'm looking at, oh my gosh, as I'm doing the traffic, and this is manifesting. It's like, I can't pay attention. This is not a good time. Oh, darn. I know, you know, it's like, oh my gosh. I was wired for the next, you know, 5 hours, 2 days, whatever. But it was like, I knew it was her gift to me to say, look, see what I can do. I'm here. And, you know, get a load of this.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my gosh. And she's talked to me. I've seen her in dreams and stuff too. But it was the funniest thing, because of all times that she would have appeared, that was one of those things of, I think also it helped that I was distracted, that I wasn't looking directly, that I wasn't able, because that, you know, it's sometimes those messages come when you're doing 50 million other things, like in the shower. Okay. And
right.
it gets in between all the flotsam that comes about from worrying about, is my hair done? Did I, you know, I do all this stuff. And so it was, but it was amazing, because, and then it just dissolved. And there was no noise. There was nothing different. It was just that appearing. And I've seen this physical form all of a sudden manifested with that fuzz, that it was, you know, black and white kind of fuzzy stuff there. And I'm like, wow, that's cool.
So those moments never are in a moment of perfection, you know. It's the perfect time. That's really neat that you had that experience.
We all do these things differently. That's why, you know, when you saw those the five images with the smoke or the fog or however it manifests, then it's an indication. Look, that's part of our reality. That's us too. Mm-hmm. We have all of these really, really neat experiences that I think we're sharing more because we have the internet, because we can connect in ways that we have not had access to. So through all of the upheaval, all the chaos, all the garbage that's happening and has happened throughout our history, honestly, throughout our history, we have, we've had all sorts of nonsense, but it has made us more resilient and more curious about, well, what else is happening? The stuff that they're doing, the studies I mentioned earlier with consciousness, putting the dots together and saying, look, this isn't just fiction. These aren't our hallucinations, our imagination. This is another aspect of who we are. And you are right on the front lines helping people to make those connections between life and death and beyond.
I am. And I'm privileged. I'm honored. It was never anything I thought I would be doing with my life. And it's been quite an interesting journey. my life is rich. I am never bored. always something going on. And I tell people that are having those kinds of experiences, like the one you experienced being at the traffic desk. To me, in my book, in measuring what experiences people have had, that was a big one. That was big. And, you know, my thing with the wisps of the clouds was big. Now, it would have been just as easy for me. There were probably 50 people in that room at that time. There might have been 10 that looked out and saw the same thing. I don't have a clue. But I know in order to make sense and meaningfulness of that occasion, I had to not only notice that there were 5 wisps of smoke, I needed to let that register with myself and then believe when I saw that there were 5 deaths that, oh, that was them.
Yeah.
So I tell people who will come to me and say, do you think that when, and fill in the blank, I hear their experience of a connection that they think happened, do you think that was really them? I tell people, if you think that it was them, they got your attention. They did what you picked up on, and now it's your job to take that and just run with the belief and the gratitude that that was them. You don't need a medium to verify what happened.
Do you have the spirits visit you at night, like before you're going to do a reading? Do you have little interlopers come in and say, hello, I'm here?
Not very often. I do with people that I've been reading for 20 or 30 years now, where I know most of their people that have passed, sometimes animals. But every once in a while, right before I'm doing a reading, or if I wake up, which I often do at 3-ish in the morning, I might hear, even though I'm not dreaming about that reading or even thinking about it, I'll hear from somebody, be sure to tell her that blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And I'll just say, thank you for letting me know, but we'll have to wait and talk about that when it's time for that reading. Because I'm really stringent on borders between myself and communicating with, especially with work things. Plus, I don't always remember.
Mm-hmm.
I might remember that, I think they were there last night, but I won't remember what was said, and that doesn't help a client any.
Well, okay, so what would be the most common thing that when someone appears to you to give their loved one who's still here, what is, by and large, the most common message?
I'm well. I'm not only just well, I'm perfect. My health is restored. My thinking is restored. If I was lacking in that in some way, shape, or form, my body is whole. That surprises some people because, and I must say, what I get in readings, I can say over the, decades now that it's pretty consistent. But is that in fact actually what it will be like when I pass, when you pass? I don't know. All I know is that this has been consistent in what I've been shown, but that they're all right is probably the biggest thing, because that's the biggest concern / worry people seem to have about their loved ones.
Oh, I think that's common with the pain, knowing that someone was in pain when they passed, or if it was a tragedy or something like that, then that there would be concern mm-hmm. for their well-being. It's like, okay, I know you're deceased, mm-hmm. but does this make a difference? Are you okay now? And that would be very comforting to hear.
Yeah. The second most common thing I would say is from the living, do they see us? Does he see me? Does she see me? Does she know my kids? And in readings, when those questions come up, I usually will, if somebody has 3 living children, I'll take them name and age one by one, and then usually am able to tell the client something specific that's going on with one of those children. It might be something totally innocuous, like all of a sudden a kid is can't get enough oranges to eat, a big deal. But, it's something that's pertinent and meaningful usually.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think what that does is it gives them, it's a hit. It's something that's relevant to them that not anyone would know right offhand. And I love it when people say, well, did you go search it on the internet? Right.
Oh, God.
It's just like, but that's it. Did you Google it? Did you Google all about me? And do you already know this? And I'm thinking, how the heck would some of this stuff ever get anywhere else? But yeah, that's, I think that's interesting.
Yeah. I don't get that so much anymore, but I think that's partly because I've also in, I think some people that are in business will kind of ask, what is the perfect client for me, not just in my own interest, but who can I best serve? And for people that doesn't happen anymore very often, that would, but it did years ago, that would want me to prove that I could do what I can do. Mm-hmm. And I think I've been able to move from, it's not what I'm doing, it's as a medium, I'm truly in the middle of my client and spirit. And I'm just an interpreter, listening very well as I can to what's coming through, doing the same with the living, listening to their questions and interpreting also what's really behind the question sometimes, because sometimes people aren't either real in touch with where they're at or aren't always real honest where they're at with themselves and not just with me, that I need to be able to translate that. So I'm only as good as spirit allows me to be and as good as the client is willing to accept.
When you're working with people, has there ever been a time where you did not feel safe, where you felt like whatever was there was, I guess, basically not friendly? I'll put it that way.
I always laugh at this question because the answer is not going to be what you think, Wendy.
Okay, good.
The answer is yes. Yes, there have been times I've been afraid, and that was, I was afraid of the client, not of the spirit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
For example, this is a quick one. I was down in Oklahoma at a psychic fair years ago, and I've had this come up a few times, but this is the first time it did. And a woman sat down, and he said, "What are the questions you want me to look at today?" And she just looked at me with a straight face, and this was the question: "Will I be caught if I murder my husband?" You know, I've been a law enforcement dispatcher. I've worked with domestic violence in my career. And I'm really practiced at whatever happens, act as if it's intended. And
okay.
That one tried me.
Oh,
that
yeah.
That one tried me.
Oh.
Yeah, I've had things like that. And then have had a couple of experiences where women have come in with their spouse and the spouse is a domestic abuser.
Yeah.
And that makes the situation very dicey, especially when they come in and they've been drinking also. So, which I don't read for people in that circumstance, but that was dicey because that was not just standing up to some guy and saying, "Oh, you've been drinking too much. We're not going to do this. Let's reschedule." It was like, "Oh God." So otherwise, no, I think I've not been afraid of what or who might come through or come in, because my premise is that whomever comes through in a reading must have spirit themselves in a good light, positive, have the client in a positive and loving light, but me too, because I'm not going to put up with anything else. And that's how it's gone.
Okay, I just touched on that because you're also psychic. And so there would be other things that you might pick up on, like a ghost or something, you know, a thought form, something else that would be there that wasn't necessarily part of the game plan. And when that happens, mm-hmm. then it kind of takes it a different direction. The woman who asked that, I'm thinking, was that a test? Was she serious? Is that okay? I'm closing up shop for the day. This is enough.
She was deadly serious. No pun intended.
Yes.
She was deadly serious. And I've been asked that by two other women at subsequent readings over the years.
Now, good grief.
I've done hundreds of readings.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So what's the answer? Because I'm sure you have to have an answer with this. I'm not the person to talk to about this. Seek a counselor.
I do that. I also, encourage a therapist, a counselor, clergy, talk to somebody with law enforcement or mental health. Go to your emergency room.
Just somebody with law enforcement.
In all due seriousness, because sometimes, that if I were a licensed social worker, for example, I'd be mandated, that's pretty borderline, in making a report. But I'm not.
Yeah.
And furthermore, to violate somebody's confidentiality, it gets dicey. Mm-hmm. But that stuff rarely comes up. And then the other thing is I abruptly will end the reading at that.
Yeah.
I did all three times. And thank you so much for your time and the opportunity to read for you, but we need to finish up today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's my thought is, okay, done. This is not the place, not the time. I'm not the person. Best of luck. And I'm being a little bit flippant about it, but that's trauma, you know, for somebody to be in that desperate state where they're actually going to come forward and pursue that line of questioning. That's an immediate red flag in their own life, in their own circumstances, that they feel that they are addressing it from that angle. But it also says there's a level of trust when someone goes to a psychic or a medium that they can basically, you know, bare soul of this is what it is. And so that puts you in a tough position.
It does. And it's almost like I found that with having had my hair done for decades now, that I hear from other chairs and some things I'll tell my hairdresser that I don't tell anybody else. I think that happens in that profession also. Mm-hmm. But in mine, I would guess, I've never kept track of it, that a good percentage of the readings, I refer people to all kinds of different things, but therapy is one for certain issues usually. That I will suggest for somebody that already isn't in it. But yeah, people will tell me things that, they'll say to me, I've never told anybody this before. And I keep those things confidential. And also, I don't always remember them, mm-hmm. Which has been a blessing that I don't hold on to other people's stuff.
That's one thing I think people think, okay, is she keeping track and she'll know. So when I come back next time, she'll know all of this stuff. No. No.
Mm-hmm. And that's hard because, you know, when people share those things and they come in again and want me to start right where we left off 2 years ago, can't. So I need to be refreshed and they should not at all take that personally. But I feel bad. I can think of a thing reading probably at least 15 years ago when I was living in Kansas City. A woman came in with some of her other living children in regard to one of her children, a daughter as a teenager, had died in a really horrific, really awful car crash. And the first time the reading was, I think, really good. And they did too. They came back for another one and I needed them to have them refresh me on some of the details. And I told them, I don't remember. I am so sorry. And I'll tell you that I'm very sorry. I know this is a major life event for you, but you'll have to refresh me. Mm-hmm. And some people, I think, that take it to heart.
Yeah.
That I don't care, that I didn't remember. And I've gotten through that and over that through the years. But nonetheless, it's hurtful for some people.
Well, I think, because it's a sensitive, whatever it is, it's a sensitive subject. They've already got the emotions wrapped up in that. And then it's like, oh, darn, it didn't make a difference. And it's just that security of self-worth of, oh, it was a big thing for me, but it didn't make a difference. And that is so far from the truth. So far from the truth. For one thing, you're basically, you know, taking, you're washing the soul. Whenever you do these readings, you're going through and you're helping people wash out some of the dirt, recollect things that are super important, and become, in a way, refreshed and renewed and replenished. And so to expect to go right back to that same point means there's a lot more healing that needs to be done for that person. And again, you do a lot of good work with the way that you approach these things and allow people to express themselves and then hopefully go forward. And that's a gift.
Well, I'm honored to be able to do that. And I, you know, in honesty with my communication skills, my bachelor's degree was in something called family environment. My master's degree is in law enforcement and justice administration. I've had lots of formal education on communicating. Am I always the best communicator? Absolutely not. But those things, those skills help me to do a decent job at this work. And that's one of the things with the Winbridge mediums, back to that, that all of us had other lives than the psychic work. I think if you wind, I know I've seen photos of many of us, never all of us together, but many of us, and you'd be hard pressed to not think that that was a high school class reunion photo. Everybody, you know, is in similar attire and I don't have a turban on, and you know, I'm not bejeweled and bedecked. We just are kind of average people.
Yeah,
I think that was important to Winbridge also when they selected us.
You are authentic, and I think it also speaks to the credibility that you aren't trying to hide or adopt some kind of, and see, that's a part of it, that acting element that comes with it, that some people, I know one person, she said that she had a reading from somebody and the woman who gave her the reading had to drink before she did that because she wasn't comfortable. Gave a good reading, but the only way she could do it was if she was drinking. And okay, there's a clue.
Wow.
You know, the person who had to drink is uncomfortable. That it makes them feel ashamed or some kind of judgment that they can't just do the reading. And so that's yeah. Another, you know, it isn't unnatural. It's natural. These are things that people can access when they are sometimes challenged or other times encouraged. I think that's so important for people to know that these aren't weird, odd, crazy things that people do when they're being asked to do a psychic task or something that involves mediumship, that this is part of our world.
Right. Right. And if you look back into history, mediums have been part of the culture for thousands of years back, and prophets, some of them were called that.
Shamans,
yep, there's another word. When Winbridge did the profiling of mediums, one of the things that had happened in my own medium life that encouraged me to encourage Winbridge to do that was that as a very young medium in my late 20s, when I started doing psychic fairs around the Midwest, I noticed that the older mediums, which are like probably younger than what I am now, I noticed some similarities, not in all of them, but in many of them. They were physically unwell. They were overweight, many of them. Some of them had addictions. I looked around and I thought, man, I don't want to end up like this. Mm-hmm. What is it that's contributing to this? And that's one of the reasons I wanted that profiling to be done. And I have had significant health issues that happened after that time period, that I'm lucky I'm alive. I'm very fortunate with hard work on my part and good medical team and good metaphysical team. I'm still kicking and doing well. But, so I think for young people interested in going into this as a line of work or looking at it, you know, and what profession would this not be words of advice for, but maintaining your physical and emotional well-being is so important when one is doing this work.
I agree. And there's an example I can give. There was a woman, a psychic, and she did readings, and the thing that she was very good at was telling when someone would die. That was her forte. And looking at her, she was a petite. She had a gray aura, and she kept young boys around her to help her facilitate and do her readings. But I thought, okay, that is almost like a vampire energy. And I'm getting off the deep end with this. But those kinds of things that you draw to you when you choose to go a certain direction, it has consequences. And so to me, she was drawing the energy from the young men, and she was also putting out an energy she was extremely efficient at that death perception. And I thought, wow, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that.
I agree.
But
isn't it funny how sometimes in the work we learn what not to do, what we don't want to do, the road we don't want to go down.
Yeah.
Which forces us, I think, to either draw to us that which we want or to find it.
I just observed, you know, I wasn't trying to make a judgment. I was trying to make a decision. Okay, this is not the direction for me.
Right. No, that makes perfect sense.
Well, the other thing too, was I saw the impact it had on the person I was with. It was like, oh, this is not a happy reading. This is like, oh my gosh. And what am I supposed to do with this? It was, it was completely off base. Does that make sense?
Oh, yes. And I think that, again, you know, using one's own intuition, instinct as to this is good, this is not good for me. I think it's important to trust that to be a good consumer when you're researching a medium or a psychic or whatever for yourself, be it as a tarot reader or an astrologer or whatever in the woo, in the metaphysical area, because there are great human beings doing that work, and then there are others that are struggling and maybe not such good intentions.
For someone who is interested and may have some abilities and some gifts, where would you direct them?
Well, there are different things. Starting with me, on my website, there are, it's on a tab that's called Pricing and Scheduling. And my website is my name, TracyBray.com, and Tracy's with an I. And there are three readings one can choose from. And one, it's just a matter of time, 30 minutes or 60 minutes. And then the third one is about using your intuitive gifts. And it's based on where the client wants to take that. And that's what we do for an hour and a half in that reading. Answer the questions you just asked as they pertain to each individual. It's not a prescripted format that I use at all. I just listen to somebody talk about where they're at and where they think they might like to go. During that, a lot of different resources come up. Some of the ones that are common, and let's go through a few of them. One would be Winbridge, winbridge.org. And they have a lot of their studies are published on there. There's information on there about how to choose a good medium. Dr. Beischel's books are on there. I'm in some of those, which are really inexpensive, most of them on Amazon. Another place is, and I should say religiously, I don't practice or follow any particular religion. I was raised as a Methodist, loosely, but I'm really familiar with a religion called spiritualism and spiritualist churches, of which there are not many left around the United States. And most of those have something in the summers they call camp. And if one were to search on the computer, for example, for spiritualist churches, United States summer camp, lots of them would pop up. One of the most famous is Lily Dale in New York. A lot of people have heard of that.
Yeah.
There's Chesterfield in Indiana, and there is Casadega, Florida.
Florida.
And those tend to be kind of colonies of spiritualists that live together, where not only can you get readings, but you can also learn a lot from their church services, from the classes and events they have, usually extraordinarily inexpensive, not so much at Lily Dale, but definitely at some of the rural ones, like there's one in Wells, Kansas. There were two in my hometown of Clinton, Iowa. I don't know if either of them exist any longer, but those are another thing. Read, read, read. I think through Unity Churches, they often will invite different speakers in on a variety of different topics. And I think if something even remotely interests somebody, they should go because they're going to meet like-minded people and hear of other events.
Okay.
So those are just some.
Yeah,
easy
yeah.
things anybody can do.
Well, it's just that, you know, if you're listening right now and you're trying to make a decision, because this is a time when things are changing and the possibilities are really endless. I wanted to go back to that quote that I said earlier and attributed to Mark Twain. And it was, what are the two most important days in your life? Because I didn't remember if I said it like that. The two most important days in your life, the day you are born and the day you find out why. So this could be the day that this is important, and it may make sense, whatever it is you're supposed to do. You don't have to be a medium, don't have to be a psychic, but whatever it is with this time of change and uncertainty and anything's possible, you can find something that fits perfectly for you. How's that, Tracy?
That is perfect. And also I would say that when you asked what are common things, the most common things somebody asks, that what you just brought up is very common to hear, both what is my purpose, and or am I living my purpose, my life's purpose? That's something people are genuinely curious about, and I think a reading can help with. And it's not often that there's a huge surprise for people in that, although sometimes there is. And it's always one thing I pride myself in my readings. I try to be positive. I am not a shocker. I'm not about shock value. I'm not about, I won't discuss time of death with people or cause of death with people. Generally, you know, if somebody has somebody in a nursing home that's on life support. I mean, the end is near, folks. You don't need a psychic to tell you that.
There's something fun about that, or interesting about that, is sometimes, no matter what anybody thinks about when that person is going to die, they wait for their people. Mm-hmm. They wait for the person who needs to be there, that they're trying to make that last minute connection with. And so no matter what the prognosis is, 2 weeks, 5 weeks, 6 weeks, you know, 6 months, there's something that has to happen from the other side for this to go forward. And I always look at that as that's what's going to happen. No matter what anybody in the physical tells me, I know that mm-hmm. spirit has a higher purpose, and that purpose will be, that's what's going to happen in the long run. So that's how I go with it, instead of, you know, saying, laying it all on somebody's shoulders, knowing there's a higher purpose that's in action here. And sometimes we have mm-hmm. to develop a trust with that. And then, you know, like a reading with you will give somebody an idea, a permission to believe maybe what they already know and just are not ready to face.
Mm-hmm. That's true. They can be very helpful in that way. And also people who worry, a natural concern, am I going to survive losing this other person that I love so very much in my life?
Yeah.
And the answer always is yes. And then furthermore, I often get information on how they're going to go about doing that. So it gets to a person with a pending death. And when you get down to it, we're all pending everybody else's death. You know, mm-hmm. our own deaths are pending. Mm-hmm. But it helps give reassurance that I will be able to move through this. And I look at moving through the death process rather than to the death process or to the actual death. I think that's where a lot of people get hung up and stuck, both after and just prior to a death.
Have you ever experienced a miracle?
Oh, God, yes. Yes, yes, yes. I've seen them, you know, in others. I've heard of hundreds of thousands of them. But in my own life, absolutely. I'm trying to think of one here I could share. Well, I'm not uncomfortable with this. I've had mental health struggles through my adult lifetime. And that mainly the genesis of that was that bombing when I was 17. And I didn't know and I didn't discover until I was 56 or 57. So what's that, 40 years later, that I had been suffering from post-traumatic stress. And there's a lot more to that story that yeah. makes that I can't tell that makes that story even deeper. But when I was in my mid-30s, I had gone through, I mentioned major illness, and unbeknownst to me at the time, I was just getting sicker and sicker, developing major illness after major illness in my 30s. They couldn't figure out why, they being physicians who were really good and concerned. I got to a point where I was suicidal. And one morning I woke up, it was summer in Moline, Illinois, and humid as heck. And I had two of my dogs with me, and I just said out loud, I cannot do this anymore. By the time this day is over, I need a strong message as to why I need to continue. I didn't know what I was going to do, how I was going to do it, but I just knew without a doubt I was done. And nothing, what was so odd about this, my life was in pretty good shape. I had a great job. I owned my first home. I had animals that I loved, good friends. I mean, good things were going on. So anyway, three things happened to me that day. I dragged myself out of bed, and this is somebody at the time. I didn't go to the grocery store without makeup on. What a change time has made. But anyway, I got up and I wore to bed that night. Those little girl undershirts, you know, that are just the strappy cotton thing pull over your head,
yeah.
and a pair of underwear. And I put a pair of loose jean shorts and a work shirt over the top of them and thought, I need to mow my lawn today because I don't want to leave mom and dad with that responsibility for a few weeks at least. This is how serious I was. I got in the car with my gas can, drove about two blocks. The windows were down. I heard someone screaming, and it was a gut. I thought, this person has been stabbed. It was kind of a scream with a heartbeat. And I jumped out of the car and ran toward him, and he had been working in his garage, and the vehicle he was working on slipped off the jack and severed his arm. And between another person and I, 911 got called, and I went to get my gas very bloody, but got it and thought, thank you, God, I get it. I call my doctor on Monday and try to get to the bottom of whatever is wrong here. That wasn't all that happened that day. The next thing was that I gardened outside and really enjoyed it all day. Didn't go in until almost dark. Took a shower and thought, after I ate, fed the dog, thought I'm going to go get a hot fudge sundae because I really like them. It'd been a really hard day and I deserve one. And went to go do that. And on the way home, was at a four-way stop at a pretty known intersection in the community I lived in. There was a car in front of me. Something, you know, this is a precognition. I just knew something was not right. And what happened was, not with my vehicle, but with another one, there was a pretty severe crash with somebody not paying attention, and somebody was ejected out of a vehicle. And the intersection was full. There were a lot of people around helping. And somehow I followed the ascending vehicle, which drove on, got its plate, and was able to call that in. And I thought, okay, I got it. I'm going to go to the doctor on Monday. Yeah. I got the message, but that wasn't it.
Yeah.
I went home. The phone was ringing, and I picked it up. And it was, how do I keep this confidential? It was somebody that I knew somewhat. Not best buds by any means, who basically asked me to meet them for breakfast the next day to talk because they trusted me and that they didn't think they could go on anymore. They were considering suicide. And I agreed to meet that person, and that person is still alive today, a grandparent, and not in touch at all. But, you know, by the time I laid down that night to go to sleep, that was a set of three miracles.
Was there something else going on in your life?
There was something definitely going on in my life that I didn't know of at the time. And I was working in a facility where I and all of my coworkers were being exposed to asbestos, toxic mold, and a number of other airborne toxins. And a number of us were becoming severely ill. And one of the things that I later learned in my illness was that the left frontal lobe of my brain was, the lining of my brain was deteriorating some. Now, keep in mind that I was reading long before this, and I've been reading long after that. It's over 30 years ago now. But I was becoming physically and emotionally, mentally ill. Some people have asked, well, did your readings become stronger during that time? Not necessarily. They didn't become any less than they had been, but they probably started to come faster and they increased in frequency and intensity during that time in some ways, and particularly messages for myself.
Was this something like a workman's comp issue? Is there some, I mean, this, that sounds very serious.
It was nearly deadly for me. I had coworkers that did die. It was something that was litigated. I can say this comfortably now. I'm not allowed to talk about it at all, which is total BS, because for me, who lost my home, all of my retirement, my earning power, because I could never do work like that again, still can't, I settled for less than $6,000. I was uninsurable at that time. I could have purchased health insurance with a $5,000 or $500 deductible and, just
a losing game.
It was. My medication cost as a result of this illness without insurance would be well over $6,000 a month. So it was devastating. I think I might have mentioned earlier, maybe not, that I thought by this time today in my life, I would be a retired university professor in my field of law enforcement and justice administration. And I had was just getting ready to sign up for my PhD work around this time and never went further. I couldn't do that if my life depended on it now.
Wow.
So my life, you know, took obviously a dramatic change. Was that something, you know, I subscribed to what's going to happen is going to happen. And maybe what's supposed to happen is what's supposed to happen. I'm not quite sure on that anymore. And monetarily, it was nothing that was helpful. It was devastating. It was humiliating. It was painful.
So the miracles that happened with that, it seems like it was a big incentive to say, you're still worthy, you're still valuable, it's still worth staying. And that those were incredibly significant experiences. But my question again has more to do with, so when someone goes through something like this, it might be good to check the potential of environmental factors, like the home you're living in and what you could be exposed to in your home and your area, the whole nine yards, because that's a completely, sometimes people don't even think about that. And this really draws that to the fore.
The other thing with that is also, even today, 30 years later, physicians don't think to go there. I can't tell you how many readings I've done over the years where people will want to talk about health issues. And when it's a fungal exposure or environmental exposure, I tend to hone in on that like a bird dog. And it's just, part of it is knowledge of what symptomology is. But sometimes I just see fungus. And often I've heard from a number of people that this is something today that's sometimes difficult to get a physician to even be willing to look at it. Like the thinking of a little bit of mold on bread or on your shower isn't going to kill anybody. And that's probably true about those two types of mold, but it certainly isn't about Stachybotrys, which is, for example, black mold.
Yeah.
But Stachybotrys is everywhere, but is it everywhere where we are? Not necessarily, and nor should it be.
Well, I do know that somebody in the neighborhood had their shower, their bathroom remodeled, and they found black mold. And it wasn't anything that they had any idea about. But when the person who was remodeling said, this is really a good thing that you did this, because this wasn't going to be helpful.
Yeah. And when you look at with as many people that I worked around, there were a lot of people in there. When you looked at the physical and mental affect of what was manifesting in employees, it was widespread. Some were respiratory, some were cardiac, some were a number of people, myself included, developed cancer. Mental health issues abounded in a workplace that ideally should have been filled with really mentally healthy people. It was astonishing. Gut issues, IBS, explosive diarrhea, vomiting, as well as a number of us had bloody noses that were so significant and stunning and fast that we really should have been in the ER. Some of us were.
So at least, you know, getting to the bottom of that, saying this wasn't just something where it was a psychological issue, it was actually a physical issue, and that created psychological problems. But thank you for filling in that extra piece of information, because we don't always go there. And, you know, it's like when it's a tough question to ask, why are you suicidal? What happened? What was wrong? What's wrong with you? It's like, wait, back up. let's do some more homework on this. And I think that's incredibly helpful.
Probably if we looked at miracles, another miracle with this, and this is a short one, was when I found out that mold might be at the base of this problem. One of my coworkers, I was living in Kansas at the time, and she was far, far away where we were when this happened. And she called and she told me that her sister had read an article in a traditionally women's magazine about mold in a home that nearly killed the family. And when she read the article, almost all the symptoms were listed were symptoms that my friend, her sister, was experiencing. So then that's when a group of employees got together and the forensic toxicologist came in and out. At the time, my private office in this facility was recorded by three separate forensic toxicologists as the heaviest amount of black mold ever on record in the world. That I am alive in and of itself is a miracle. But back to the other miracle with this, Cherie, is that when she called me for the first time in my life, me with this stellar work record, I'm really proud of it still, what I was able to accomplish in traditional work through the years, I got fired from a job for inability to master basic skills. And that was very true. I knew it was true. I didn't have a beef with being fired. I was just humiliated. And that was another time I was literally the day she called, that she called in an afternoon, that morning, I was feeling that helpless, hopeless, oh my God, what is wrong with me? Something is wrong. My family, friends were, you know, you're so capable and so talented and so this and so that. Why are things so difficult for you now? I'll be damned if I knew. My doctors didn't know. But it was when this friend called, former coworker, and said, here's what we might have going on. Are you willing to come back and be tested? I was on a brink because economically, I'd lost everything by that point. My home, my job, my earning power, my savings, it was all gone.
Mm-hmm. Symptoms.
Symptoms can really vary. I would encourage anybody to do a web search on black mold, and it's also called stachybotrys. It's the kind of mold that if you go into a building and you look up at a false ceiling, not concrete, but something that's cellulose-based, like drywall, stucco, popcorn ceilings, where you see black or greenish-black, greenish-bluish-black stains on the ceiling. That's usually a sign that that's what that looks like. But when you mentioned a neighbor with something behind the shower, that there wasn't any of that showing in that bathroom. So people initially are inclined to say, no, I've never been exposed to that. Well, think of the elementary schools a lot of us were in, older buildings, our workplaces, et cetera. So anyway, symptoms can be respiratory. A lot of children that are raised in buildings where there are is toxic mold, asthma and respiratory issues, pulmonary issues with heart, lungs, cancer of a variety of times. Mine was skin cancer, and interestingly, it was on the tops of my hands. When you think from the air, what's exposed at a desk and the top of my head and my nose. Breast cancer ran rampant in that facility. Mental health issues, depression, anxiety. I'm trying to think of other things I've read that you would be able to read with no problem. Gut issues, irritable bowel syndrome, explosive diarrhea. I had degenerative bone disease. I developed that when I worked there. People with, at the time it was believed, and I've not seen studies since, that if you have a mold exposure that's significant, it's really difficult to heal from soft tissue injuries. And by the time I was 42, I had a hip replaced and a biceps and rotator cuff repaired. Before this exposure, I was doing aerobics weekly, swam quite a bit, was active in pretty decent shape. I put on weight gain is another one, 67 pounds, very quickly. So those are some of them.
So basically, the immune system is really affected by that too.
It is an immuno suppressant issue. The whole deal is to survive. And it develops mycotoxins when it's in your body, which means the mold grows with inside of you.
Okay.
I don't have a septum in my nose because it was eaten away.
Okay. Well, I think you kind of did the works. If anybody could be sick, it seems like that covers all the bases. But at the same time, knowing that that was a factor in the suicidal thoughts and all of that, that that was what would push anybody over the edge.
Absolutely. Thank you for summarizing it that way, because I think one of my things at the time was people must think I'm such a slouch. You know, I've been producing all of this wonderful work, using work as an example, and I'm just not anymore. I don't know why. Mm-hmm. But there was an underlying reason, a huge underlying reason.
I can see you have more than one guide.
It's like, definitely. And I think their behinds were worn out that night.
Yeah. That was a team effort. It's like, okay, all hands on deck. This one's challenging. Okay. There she's on the mm-hmm. bridge. It's a Wonderful Life, and there she goes. Okay, Clarence.
A Story for Another Time is my story about a very Clarence-like angel. But now that you mentioned that, that was quite apropos.
You had a
an angel just like Clarence. Yes.
Oh, okay, come on.
Do you want me to tell you that for another time? Or you want me to do it now? I can do it now.
Well, okay. Yeah, why not? Let's hear it.
I was... again, around that same time that I had mentioned in a previous story about miracles in my life, I had been dating somebody for quite a while, and we never fought. We had lively discussions, and we had had a horrible argument, verbal argument, before I was to leave to drive about an hour to go, actually, to a reading at the spiritualist church in my hometown of Clinton, Iowa. It was called Mississippi Valley Spiritualist Church. So I got in the car and started out and was very upset and sad and was crying. But I was crying really hard to the point where I thought, you know, girl, you better get your shit together here, sorry, or pull this car over because you're just not safe to drive right now. And in my mind's eye, I saw what I now believe to be an angel, dressed like Clarence in the movie It's a Wonderful Life, who when Clarence first came in, he was in a 1800s, probably wool or linen or a combination of thereof, a full-length nightshirt, like a nightgown. Mm-hmm. And this angel, this guy, did a cartwheel in my mind's eye in front of me. Now, I have never had anything like that happen before or after, and honestly thought it stopped my thinking and my sadness and my grief and my lack of getting a grip, because I thought, what the hell was that? And I just kind of paused and, you know, kept driving and was just very still as I'm driving, and then I see him do a somersault, and then I see him walk on his hands. And it was just this little image in my mind's eye of this man doing these things. And I started to laugh. And I just kind of said to myself or to him, I don't know who you are, but thank you for being a distraction. I'm good to go. Okay, so I go up to Clinton, and I'm in this group. Actually, it was a channeling session, and I don't remember the woman's name, and she was excellent. She wasn't from around that area. And I think there were eight of us in the group. And she went person by person and brought two or three people through for each person. And when she got to me, this is what she said. And I do have a witness to this who was there with me. And she said, you know, and I'd never seen this woman before. I think she was from Florida. And she said, and she could change her voice inflections. She did that with most of the spirits she brought through. So 3 times 8, 24 spirits. Up to that in this ring, she says, you know, on your drive up here, I didn't know if I was going to be able to get your attention or not. Now, she's speaking for a spirit coming through.
Yeah.
Now, the person I was there with didn't even know this had happened to me. And I'm not kidding you. I was like, oh, my gosh. And she says, I know you were very upset, but you made it. And you don't know who I am, do you? And I said, I know who you are by what happened, what you're talking about, but no, I don't know who this is. And she says, my name is Many Feathers. And I said, okay. And she said, you know, is Many Feathers familiar to you? And I said, no. And then she said, on behalf of Many Feathers, do you know why I'm called that? And I said, no. And she says, well, what do feathers do? And I said, they help us to fly. They pickle. They also are, I can't remember the other thing I said. But anyway, she says, but what can they do? And I said, oh, they're quills to write with. Original ink pens were, for many cultures, quills of feathers filled with ink that would write. And she says, that's who I am for you. Now, in subsequent readings, people would tell me that I would that I would have a lot of writing to do in my work. And I did do a lot of writing, totally separate from what I do for a living now, in several projects I worked on, mainly regarding domestic abuse and methamphetamine use and production. And that they have, those pieces of writings have been instrumental in changing the well-being and survival of many people. So I'd like to think some of the writing I still do today does that as well. But there have been times that in my life I've called upon many feathers for help with many things that I write. And on occasion, he has come back not doing cartwheels or somersaults, but but I just, you know, through a knowingness, know that he's there.
But I love
it. He did look just like Clarence.
I love it. I love it. Yeah. If you need anything to lighten the mood or lighten the load, that would be perfect. The little, you know, clown antics of, okay, redirect.
No kidding.
Those miracles are fabulous. And I think everybody, you know, can relate. If there's something in your life that needs a redirect, a change, a shift, an uplift, having an angel on your side is a slam dunk.
True. You know, and it would have been just as easy for me, maybe not just as easy, but other options I had in the situation of both of those miracles that I told you about would have been to go to an emergency room, would have been to call my physician and say, with the Clarence, I'm hallucinating. I didn't believe I was hallucinating. I was using no substances or alcohol, not at all. And I had enough faith in myself to, even though I didn't know what the explanation was, to continue doing what I was doing for the evening, get that business finished, and then figure out the rest later, or it would come to me and help me figure it out. And lo and behold, look what happened.
Yeah.
Very quickly, I knew what that was.
I love it. It's outstanding. For readings, you are available, TracyBray.com, and it's TracyBray.com. And then you also have the Oracle cards for readings, and you also are going to be writing. So people who want to connect, they can get you on Facebook, which also goes on Instagram. Anything else you want to add that I've overlooked?
My newsletter, sign up for that off of the website. And Winbridge has a great newsletter, also both free. Winbridge.org is their site. But that about does it.
Thank you for sharing your miracles. I really appreciate that. It makes it real, okay? These are real experiences that show how we are connected in ways that we can't even imagine until it happens.
And it does happen. And it does happen to most people. Whether we choose to embrace it, to believe it, to be inquisitive, beyond the action that happened, that's up to us. But we're being given these things all the time.
So for many feathers, maybe it's not a journal or another freelance project. Maybe it's a book. You've got it in you. Just contemplate that.
That one, along with others, are already written down. The book is written. It's a matter of editing it and finding somebody that's interested in publishing it.
Well, there you go. Okay. Light the fire.
All righty.
Thank you. Thank you. And we'll talk again. You've got so much going on. We'll connect. You might have another miracle that you would care to share at that point. Yay.
Well, every day is a miracle to me. Truly it is, at this stage especially. But thank you, Wendy. Thank you so much. And for spreading the word, all the good words about all the great stuff you do.
Links are in the description for the show. And thank you for listening.